streaming 13th to the 17th of May on SBS On Demand, the Eurovision Song Contest.
Hi, I'm Delta Goodrum, and I am so excited to be representing you at the world's biggest song contest.
This year, global powerhouse Delta Goodrum takes the stage for Australia.
I'm taking you all with me with my brand new song, Eclipse. Eurovision, here we come.
The Eurovision Song Contest, 13th and the 17th of May on SBS On Demand.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 6th of May, 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, the S&P ASX 200 up 1.3%, a good day. We'll go into more details with Luke Larida from Seneca Financial Solutions in a moment. But first, while rising interest rates typically mean or hit younger households with a mortgage, it would appear many senior Australians are bearing the brunt of the rising cost of living. The Bureau of Statistics says living costs for households whose main source of income is government payments are seeing their costs surge above the rate of inflation. That includes age pensioners, up 5.2% in the year to March as soaring electricity prices eat into budgets. But self-funded retirees whose primary source of income is superannuation or property rose less, but still at 3.8%. This group typically has a little more spending power and benefited from a fall in holiday travel and accommodation costs. But what it does is highlight the difference between the two seniors group. For more, I spoke with Patricia Sparrow, the CEO of the Council on the Aging of Australia. Patricia, so living costs for households whose main source of income is government payments, like age pensioners, recorded the largest quarterly rise according to the ABS. Does this surprise you? I mean, what are older Australians telling you about the way they're dealing with rising living costs and how they're dealing with it?
No, it doesn't surprise us. And when we talk to older people, they are saying that they're struggling with things where you have limited discretion over your costs. So things like electricity, for example, we know that it's one in six people have got an overdue bill, and the majority of those bills are actually electricity bills. They have less discretion, they're home more, they're using electricity. So those rising costs are really impacting on older people who are on the pension, they're on fixed incomes, struggling with other increased costs. And so it's not a surprise. What people are telling us they're doing is that they are reducing their use of essential services like electricity. And we know that many of them are struggling to keep their home cool in summer and warm in winter.
What would you like to see in the budget to address this problem?
A lot of the talk about the budget at the moment is about intergenerational fairness, which older people really support. What we do want to see, though, is that it's fair and that we don't just target older people who've done the right thing and who are trying to manage their budgets in the best way possible. We want to see equity and fairness for all generations. We don't want to just see things being gone after that seem to be the wealthy boomers. Not every boomer is wealthy. One in four of them are living in poverty. The majority of them are somewhere in between that, and another small proportion of them are doing well. It's really important that policy is based on what older people are actually experiencing. It's lazy myth to say that everyone's doing well or that it's the boomers' fault about housing. We need to make sure that there's a variety of options taken and measures taken that actually really address the housing pressures that are on younger people, but also on older people, remembering that older women are now the fastest growing group of people at risk of homelessness. So we're looking for intragenerational equity as much as intergenerational equity.
That's Patricia Sparrow there, the CEO of the Council on the Aging Australia. Now, employee households, that's those whose main source of income is wages and salaries, rose the least in the year to March, up 2.6%. Many of these households hold a mortgage who benefited from falling interest rates last year. While the RBA lifted official interest rates in February and March, the ABS says their effects will be seen in the June quarter because it takes some time for banks to pass on those increases to borrowers. But, of course, for those with a home loan, they will have to contend with an additional rate rise following yesterday's Reserve Bank decision. And now we've had confirmation from the big four banks that they'll pass on that 25 basis point increase to variable rate customers from the 15th of May. While Macquarie was the first major bank, it's the fifth largest lender, to say it'll pass on the rate rise, it'll come into effect from a later date, the 22nd of May. Meanwhile, some savings rates have also been increased. Big question now is, will there be more interest rate rises to come? For that, I spoke with Naveen, global investment strategist, Lorica, to find out. Laura, so the Reserve Bank of Australia lifted interest rates for a third time yesterday this year. Will this be enough to put the brakes on inflation?
I think that's the key question that most market participants are watching for. I think at this stage, the Reserve Bank did signal that they are going to take a wait-and-see stance and pause to assess really whether this energy shock that's coming through will have a more material impact on inflation. I think at this juncture, they're likely done their hiking cycle, but they want to keep their optionality open to react if we do see that price spike.
What's interesting, though, is that Australia has been lifting interest rates this year at the time when the rest of the world hasn't been. Although I did see some speculation in Bloomberg today suggesting that Kevin Warsh might be inclined to lift rates instead of cut rates in the US. Why is all this happening?
I think there's a number of factors. One is the fact that inflation in Australia has remained quite sticky, whether we look at the predominant driver of housing inflation, as well as services inflation has been quite strong across a number of sectors. And so that has made it a little bit more difficult for the RBA in trying to keep this restrictive policy to curtail those price pressures. As well, the RBA did start their hiking cycle later than those others like the Federal Reserve. And so there was a bit of a catch-up at play because they did take a slower hiking stance as well on the belief that inflation would largely be contained. And then we also have fiscal stimulus come through in Australia. That's made it a little bit more challenging to try to keep that policy rate restrictive. Whereas in other areas like the Fed, you know, they have really come closer to the end of their hiking cycle, and they've been on a cutting cycle because of different growth and inflation dynamics.
What's this combination of higher interest rates and inflation meaning for living standards, especially for different household groups like seniors especially? Today, the ABS released its living cost indexes. It showed that households whose main source of income is government payment, so that's the likes of aged pensioners, are seeing their costs surge the most of any household and above inflation.
Well, it's likely going to lead to a deterioration in living standards when we do have the cost of living rise above the wages or the levels of income. And so this could lead really to more of a real income squeeze as well. When we start to see higher interest rates on the back of this, that does weigh on in terms of how expensive it is to service debt costs. So that will weigh on housing affordability as well. So the RBA did actually allude to this in their meeting in saying that there is going to be, you know, more deterioration, let's say, in consumer spending. And so that's one of the reasons why perhaps the budget next week will have more targeted measures to try to provide some relief to these households.
And speaking of the budget, what's the message to the government?
I think it's a very delicate balancing act in terms of providing the support to households to try to mitigate this latest energy shock without actually providing stimulus to the economy that in turn could drive inflation higher. The RBA did caution that fiscal stimulus could be one factor driving inflation higher. And so it's a very difficult balancing act for the government to try to provide that relief to households. And I think the measures that are going to come through will likely be very targeted, whether that's a one-off income tax offset to try to provide that one-time relief, and as well looking at other more targeted measures around productivity, housing, and infrastructure, and really trying to secure energy sources, which is really what most countries are trying to do in this current dynamic.
It's Laura Cooper there, the global investment strategist at Nuveen.
Here to help you thrive in your new life in Australia by covering topics from education, housing, finance, lifestyle and more. Australia Explained by SBS is here to help brave new locals navigate life. For helpful weekly articles, podcasts and videos, search online for Australia Explained by SBS.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Let's take a closer look at the Australian share market now, which rallied the ASX 200 up 1.3%. It followed another record session in the US. The Australian dollar also surged at a fresh four-year high against the greenback at 72.5 US cents. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with Luke Laridov from Seneca Financial Solutions. Luke, so a recovery on the Australian share market today. Some indices in the US also hitting a record high again. A lot of swings, though, on the smallest amount of detail coming from the Strait of Hormuz. But are investors becoming a bit too optimistic of a near-term resolution?
Maybe, Ricardo. It's kind of going to be only obvious in hindsight. We think, you know, investors should probably just focus on kind of the longer term and, you know, in these kind of volatile conditions, I suppose we're sort of thinking about two kind of forward looking concepts. And that is really, you know, what's the likely or, you know, lasting and lingering kind of impacts of this conflict? And sort of secondary, you know, once the conflict is resolved, or at least kind of at least materially de-escalated, which companies are going to offer us, you know, the greatest opportunity to make some money. So, as much as we can all play the guessing game around when the conflict ends or if we're being too bullish or too bearish, we're trying to just take a bit of a longer term view and realize that we're probably not going to get this right, you know, forecasting.
24 hours, the RBA rate rise. How's the market positioned for future moves?
The market's actually shifted a bit on the sort of interest rate futures front. So before the hike, we had 69 basis points priced in, which is sort of just under three hikes between now and sort of the end of the calendar year. Sort of fast forward 24 hours, market's now pricing in 55 basis points. So what that kind of tells you is that sort of interest rate traders are expecting now this latest RBA increase is actually going to get inflation kind of under control and they're not going to have to do as much in the future. So it's kind of been a sort of net positive, I suppose, on the rates front at the moment.
Speaking of interest rates and inflation, one story I saw today from a company, JB Hi-Fi, posted a sales update, but within it, it said that in the technology category, it's seeing significant supplier component rate related cost increases and stock availability shortages. Is that another way to say, hey, tech prices are rising for consumers?
Maybe, but I think given that management also kind of noted that there was sort of heightened competition, it's probably more about JB Hi-Fi's margin contraction story and kind of less so about rising prices for consumer technology. I think, you know, sort of more broadly on that JB Hi-Fi result, you know, 4% sales growth in Australia is pretty good to the end of March. But the reason the stock's off 8% today is really what's going to happen in the fourth quarter, which is where I think investors are sort of paying attention. We sort of saw last week the Roy Morgan survey came out, consumer confidence survey. That was at a 10-year low. And that's pre that interest rate rise we talked about yesterday. So I think, you know, JB Hi-Fi is starting to look a little bit cheaper and better value for investors down here. It's been really expensive for some time now. It was on like 25 times earnings back in August and it's back on kind of 15 times now in line with its sort of, you know, average PE over the last 5 or 10 years. But I think the lesson here probably for investors is sort of regardless of apparent sort of earnings resilience, quality management or, you know, apparent market dominance, all retailers eventually are susceptible to the business cycle. And I think, you know, JB Hi-Fi is, you know, whilst it is a fantastic franchise, it isn't immune.
So finally, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Ricardo, there's ample opportunity at the moment. I think, you know, many high quality businesses are trading at or below 10-year valuations. You know, we continue to find investable ideas across sort of base metals miners, technology companies, non-bank financials, and even some sort of select industrials and consumer exposures. I suppose what's in our fund at the moment, we've got some fund managers like HMC Capital, which is doing quite well today on a Macquarie conference update, Regal Partners, the laboratory testing business and consumable manufacturer XRF Scientific. And the base metals miner are really from the Cobar.
That's Luke Larrida there from Seneca Financial Solutions, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a like, a review, and subscribe if you enjoy it. Don't forget you can watch On the Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News. The podcast returns tomorrow with Stephanie Youssef. I'll be off for a few days. Don't forget it drops after the market close every weekday. Stephanie will be with you tomorrow. I'll catch you on Monday.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.